Do you know, we were fine 2 minutes ago. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, it's just Alex. He was literally, there we go. Oh, there we go.
I'm not out. Oh, I thought you were going to roll the credits. I was sitting here patiently waiting for...
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, can hear you now, mate. We just did a whole 2 minutes between each other going, how's me, Mike? Can you hear me? Yes, no. Yeah. And then we all got it right. And then as soon as you went live, it stopped working.
But even by our standards, this is inept.
Oh, he's gone. That's it.
I think I'll be.
That's a bit
now,
dangerous. Is leaving me and you here, mate. That's a bit dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't know what to do because we'll get into trouble if we try and take over again, won't we?
Should we play Where is Sam? Where are you today, Sam?
I'm at Mum and Dad's in Yorkshire. Where's Mike? In Sutton.
At home, where I live.
Hello, everybody. Is that better now? I had a little...
Yeah, I got you now, mate.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, we can hear you and see you. We'll leave other people to make up their minds if that's better. But
I don't understand why he's coming with all the heat.
You've got 3 weeks behind us, Sam. What are you going on about, mate? You're still answering the question we asked you when we first logged on.
Has everyone got over being a Coventry City fan for 15 minutes?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. If everyone's to case study tell VAR ruins football, that's it. Taking the joy out of an unadulterated moment of that, what is it, toe end of whatever it was. Disgraceful. Get rid of it. Keep replays. Get rid of our football fit.
Do you know, he bangs on about this, Alex, but if that was Liverpool that was on the end of that decision and there wasn't VAR, he'd be crying blue murder about it.
22 apologies from the PGML this season. 22 apologies. 5 of them have been to Liverpool.
Sam, what you are mistaking me for is someone who gives a shit about the Premier League.
you brought Coventry into the situation and Mike mentioned Liverpool.
Not Premier League.
Championship. Championship.
Not Premier League. Well, we're here hitting you like Lance Stroll into the back of Daniel Ricciardo because he drives like your grandmother. Welcome aboard. We are officially safe. So obviously party streamers are abound. Open top bus tour is ready. The details are coming to you soon. What a glorious season we all get to bask in. And Bruce has finally risen his head. So what we tend to do is at about 11 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, I forget we were meant to do a podcast. I asked a question to our group. How many people are in our group, Mike?
I think 8.
I asked the 8 people in our group who would like to join us. 3 people usually respond to me. Everybody else has died. That is Mike, Sam, and Bruce.
It's worse. There's 10.
As 10, yeah, and 3 people respond.
But I think Jack's
you know what? I think I might have to do a Dave Artell end of season chat. I'm sorry, lads, we're not renewing your contract for another year. And you know who you are if you're listening.
Me and Sam.
Actually, do you think the guys in the WhatsApp group that don't come on? They don't get well. What's happened is because they're on the bench, they're getting better. It's the whole Harry Clifton scenario all over again. They're getting better, and the Ricky or Pike. The longer they're on the bench, the better they're getting.
So who's going to be a big season like Alex Hunt's going to be? Because inevitably he's going to become the next big thing again in the summer. Who's that?
Thankfully, I didn't hear Sam's question.
Yeah.
Did you, Mike?
I heard him say Hunt, but it sounded like something else when it broke up. So
we are going live to Jeremy Hunt in a moment, or whatever else you call him. Let's have a look. Let's have loads of people saying hello. Say hello if you can do. If you listen to this live, you can do pop a comment in on the old Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. Do put it in. Tell us what you think. Sam's died.
If you're listening in the future, like Sam seems to be.
Exactly. You can give us the lottery results. Bruce wants to give his apologies. He isn't here. We would like to thank him for attending, though, just briefly. And thank you for coming, Bruce. Yes, Sam has just come online again. I could see, so I can see everybody who's not in the call. That's just worse. Right, I'm
we've now got a dodgy, it's like a dodgy video call he's making to us. I'm half expecting him to ask for £5,000 because he's been locked up by some bad people.
He's been locked up by some bad men.
Matter of life and death, send me £5,000.
Well, I'm too busy dealing with Angela Rayner's account, so you know.
Now we've sorted out all the mics and stuff. Should we go live?
We are live. We've been live for six minutes. which says a lot. Oh, we do need to come on a bit earlier. Right, so hello to everybody. Let's go through them all while Sam's playing. Good evening, PDA. How are you? Good evening to Jack. Good evening, Daniel, Tim, Luke. Questioning in the professionalism of the podcast is just rude and accurate. Ben, great to see you on as well. To you, Grimbo, and Stuart. And Andrew talking about a Verstappen ball fest. That's, you know, most of us. Andrew Niles. Hello, Andrew. How are you? Hello, Martin. Hi, Rob. And up the Mariners, Graham. Is Bruce going to the York podcast on a season-long loan? Andrew asks. Most probably, actually. And evening, Richard. I hope you are well as well. Welcome to the DN35 podcast. It's great to have you along. Town obviously secured their safety in the Football League. However much you want to celebrate that, I will give over to you. We aren't going to go into it too much. And the only person that is standing in the way of a ripping yarn on going through grading every player, like, I'm trying to think of a mean school teacher of any TV program. Mr. Feeney from Boys Meets World. Though he wasn't that mean.
No idea.
But, you know, Mr. What was Greg Davis's character in Mr. Gilbert, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Gilbert, yeah.
We'll go like Mr. Gilbert, like grading everybody's results for the season. But we will do that next week after it's all done, because apparently that matters. we might see some of McCrawley, I guess. Simon, I am going to Crawley. I've given up tickets to Twickenham to come to Crawley. I won them in a competition and I didn't even know I had entered it. So there we go.
I'll be there. My ticket arrived this week. So
I have not bought a ticket. I assume I can pay on the gate.
I just think next week after a dead rubber, it might be quite a short Sunday if we say we lost to Crawley. Good night.
isn't that Danilo Orsi good?
Yeah. Just have a look at him. He's all right, isn't he?
Oh, right. Well, if Sam coming back, we will find out in the end of this wonderful theme tune, which I'm not 100% sure I'm going to change.
Open wide for some soccer!
And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 1130.
Go!
At 1130.
I don't think I've ever wanted to be in a stand more than my life around there. They're going crazy.
Hey, they got penalty here. They've been fish flying about that. There's no tomorrow.
What a magnificent piece of football!
A really, really good job. You can't make it fun for that.
He's back. And then he went almost instantly the second I clicked him back in. Welcome to the DN35 podcast. You are all welcome in our broad church of all things Grimsby and most likely despising of all things Premier League today. The Mariners secured their safety, as I've said, about five times, but let's milk it. Let's celebrate it. What a historic occasion for this 147-year-old club, you know, who spent the vast majority of its time in the first and second tier. We survived the fourth tier. Football is brilliant. Everybody's going great. But all sarcasm aside, it was a pretty interesting victory against Mike. Am I being too harsh to say a much depleted Swindon team?
No, I don't think that's harsh. I think for quite a period of time, Swindon have looked quite bad. They've picked a few results up recently, but they've been in three, four, haven't they? And they were playing a, a 16-year-old at centre-half, I think. So I don't think that's harsh. I think just in terms of the game, my view was we were quite nervy, and that came across quite a lot watching the game. But I think it was a typical performance, which we've done for the last 12, 13 games, where we weren't as good with the ball as we should be and need to be next year, but we were all right without it. And that seems to be the story of the end of the season, how we've managed to keep ourselves in this division is being good without the ball. First half, there's lots of chances, maybe two real good ones where we should be in the lead. But it's just that carelessness and that bit of finesse and final pass and final shot that we needed. Second half, I think it went much the same. But I do think bringing on Ainley and Andrews changed that game instantly. We won the ball a lot higher up, a lot quicker, broke quite well, and deserved the win, I think. You know, without being particularly good, I think we were the better of the two sides. I think we had 21 shots in the end to their four. So as nervy as it was, I don't think Swindon really did anything other than pass the ball about a bit. And we took our chances when we got them. So, yeah, we could have been going into the final, as it happens, Sutton conceded a late equaliser, but we could have been going into the final week having to be maths teachers and trying to work out connotations of 3-0 losses and things. So thankfully that's done and we can move on from the season. Just one more game left.
Sam, before I come on to you for your opinion on the game, Rich Scott says, last time I saw a pair of curtains like that, I was waving goodbye to my granddad. What were your thoughts on that game before you have to roll someone into the crematorium behind you?
Well, let's just see if the tech holds up this time. I've rebooted my router, that's where I've been.
Well, was the problem? Were the curtains not closing at the time you needed them to? Was that the problem? It kind of takes away from the majesty of somebody's life if you happen to come along and tug them along, I guess.
I don't know. Talking about my curtains, fucking hell, at least it's not my hairstyle. I thought yesterday, I'd agree with a lot what Mike said. It was a pretty terrible spectacle for the first 60, 70 minutes. Ainley, when he came on, showed more quality on the ball than our midfield has done all season, basically. And after Liam Smith, I thought when I saw a right back bursting through last, I thought, bloody hell, no chance here. But he took it very well. Equally with Donovan's goal, I thought bait and bash shooting from there, given you had the option. I thought Donovan generally ran the channels well, parried defenders, made it hard work for them. I quite like him, generally speaking. It's good to get it done because the prospect of us going to Crawley next week needing something, given they need something to finish in the playoffs still, with Danilo Orsi ready to extract his revenge, probably was a terrifying thought, frankly. So to go there with a kind of complete dead rubber, be sort of relaxed about it, is much nicer in isolation. I'm sure we'll talk about the season as a whole later on, or maybe in future weeks, but on your race today, it was a poor game. As Mike said, reflects a lot of what had happened in the last few weeks in terms of not a lot going on.
Sam went then, sorry.
There was
very end, but I got the gist of that, mate. It was perfect.
I don't think there was much difference between Tuesday and Saturday. The only difference is we conceded chances on Tuesday against Colchester and didn't score. I think it was much the same performance, to be fair.
It's an interesting one, really, isn't it, in terms of how people judge the season. People don't necessarily take much credence to the points gained at the very beginning of a season, nor do they do the same at the end, but it's the ones in the middle that count the most. They're all 3 points. I was really disappointed with the way we performed at Colchester. I thought we didn't play as terribly as we had done, but it's a pretty low bar. And we should actually probably talk about the Colchester game. We haven't had a podcast since. But to go into that game in which we still needed something, irrelevant of the situation we found ourselves in, I thought we were, you know, I don't think I'm any different to a lot of Town fans. I'm just glad this season is nearly over because I don't enjoy watching us play. I think as a fan base, we're very kind on the team at times, and it does feel a bit underrated at times. So as long as we pass the ball to each other, I think we all applaud quite politely. I don't think there's much pace in the team. I don't think there's much quickness. I think our set pieces are abysmal. I think defensively, we are pretty shocking at times. We lack that focus and we lack that fitness level, which is suggested in the way that the games end. What was it, 8th? I thought we saw if the game's finished after 45 minutes and almost rock bottom if it goes from the second half. And the Colchester game showed that lack of focus, considering there were, especially, and someone actually said this, why do I keep saying it? There were 440 people there on a Tuesday night in Colchester. Even if you're in London, Colchester is a hell of a long way to go. It's further than you think. And it was embarrassing that that was the level of performance they put on. And I understand Cowley did us a number, but, you know, if John Akindi is running past you, which I saw a couple of times, and unfortunately I'm talking about your much loved Doug Tharm here, Mike, that's embarrassing. I mean, Akindi's what, 98, and I'm smaller than him. That's my view on the Colchester game. And unfortunately, because of it, and I don't know if I'm alone, I went to IKEA instead of watched the Town game yesterday because I just couldn't be bothered with going through it. Now, unfortunately, I missed two pretty good goals, and maybe that's my penance for doing so. But
I very nearly did go to the Sutton game yesterday. I was thinking about whether I was going to get a bit nervy watching us, so I nearly went to Sutton to watch them against Crawley. Now, I think what you say is correct about, you know, how people treat players and things. I mean, I think just in the, we touched on it last week, didn't we? That when we're in a bit of a hole, though, that isn't the time for digging people out because it ain't going to work. So I think that there's an element of that over the last sort of 15 games since Doncaster, recognising you're in a bit of a hole and these are the players you've got. So you can moan about them or you can try and affect whatever tiny fraction of percentage you can by trying to get behind them. That doesn't change the fact that this season's been terrible and a lot of them probably won't be here next year. So, you know, thanks for your efforts, but good luck for the future. But in terms of Colchester, we conceded two terrible goals, one where the keeper should have come out to it. I'm convinced. I don't know if you had a better angle, Alex, than we did behind the goal, but I thought Eastwood should have been out to that.
From behind the sofa?
I was in the stand, wasn't I? So
That's where I was watching it from.
All right.
Rubbish. It ruined my birthday, that game. I'll tell you that.
But I mean, just going back and saying how good defensively we've been or criticising that game, other than a lob from John Akindi when we're trying to play out from the back, when we've not played out from the back since I don't know when, and a pretty comfortable keeper coming off his line, that's pretty much it. You know, we had chances, we had some chances to get back on in the second half and get back level terms. So whilst it was terrible, as it's been for a while with the ball, especially in the final third, I think defensively, again, we weren't as bad as we were before that Doncaster game. And I think that's the story at the end of the season, really. We've tightened up. We've been a lot better. We've become resolute, but we're just not good enough going forward.
Salmon had muted, so I assumed he was going to chime in with something. It's either that or he's on a delay.
There's a couple of things.
Talk about a Harrogate away game now, doesn't he?
Yeah, probably.
What I was going to say, Alex, is you didn't watch yesterday and we won. I went 6 months without attending a victory. So if that's anything to go by, you've got a long wait.
I've just got to say, though, you know, we give Yap Stam.
I didn't play for Manchester United in the 90s, mate. But
we give Stam quite a lot of grief, and rightly so on this podcast. But his dedication to the club shows that one of two things: A, the entire political party that he works for is now on hiatus, so he can go up and down the country following his League Two team. But also, it is second to none, and I applaud you for the dedication you show to the club, but not the country. but at least, hey, at least you're not locked in that room ringing for $5,000, isn't it, mate?
Another bloody one, yeah.
Were you the person that picked up the call, or was it Auntie Lunch?
nothing to do with. Don't drag poor Auntie Lunch into this. She's never worked for the Conservative Party.
Here's a question for you, Sam. How many games are you at this season, mate? Must be a lot.
32.
That's just nuts, mate. That's just incredible. Well done.
Well, Andrew now says Sam is dedicated or possibly not.
That's fair. Sam is dedicated. I think that's both. Sam, you could argue that one.
Sam also doesn't have a life, doesn't have kids, lives on his own with some flatmates, and has nothing to do on a weekend.
My flatmate's been to more town games than you this season, Mike.
No, he hasn't.
I don't know. I don't know, but I thought it's just a kind of funny thing to throw out there.
Don't come at me with stats if you haven't got the right stats. Telling you, mate.
What was this? The Colchester game? Sorry, I sort of reminded me of that crap run in the conference. In that, you know, in the conference, we didn't play much worse in the crap run than we did when we were winning loads of games at the start of the season. It's getting the Barrow game on Good Friday was like that. We conceded a couple of tame.
He's gone again, isn't he? Or is that me? Yeah, I'll be honest. You're having more breakups than Taylor Swift.
Dear, oh dear. But no, can you hear me again now?
No.
Hilarious. but we're good. It certainly laid bare some inadequacies. Jake Eastwood isn't up to it, is one of them. I mean, this thing about coming out of his line, I noticed a couple of occasions yesterday where he makes the defence nervy because of the way he just sort of gets caught in no man's land and doesn't know whether he's coming or going, quite literally. And that undermines everything you're trying to do. So that's a flaw in his game. I thought, and the thing about the Carrollers is, you should know, like, pros, they're going to go down every single touch, every single slight touch. Don't give them the opportunity to. They're going to run the clock down. Don't get drawn into their kind of antics.
I've been in genuine war zones and had a better connection on the internet than Sam has. It's incredible, isn't it?
Can I say that challenge on a Bikwu was disgusting, by the way. Did anybody have a good look at that? I'd gone down to the bottom, ready to make my way off for the train. And it was, he should have got two reds for that. It was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But that was that. I mean, that was that. And then Crewe was different. That pass by Ainley was beautiful. It was a nice finish by Donovan Wilson as well. And it was nice. But, are you giggling at?
No, I put it on Twitter. But you know when you sat there on your own or you're watching the game and you're making comments as it goes along. And I made my wife jump because I'm going, like, pass the ball. And he didn't. And I was starting to get angry and went, all right, I'll just ditch it from there then. You need to unmute, mate.
I'm just a shame I can't put a picture on Sam's face. He says he's going to just do audio.
Yeah, so. I've tried sitting near the router to see if that fixes it. That's fixed it before.
I think what he's not showing what he looks like because he's probably got the router balanced on his head.
I mean, visually, it's better, Sam. It's better visually, not so much audio.
That's mean.
I've already made that joke tonight.
That's mean. That's so mean.
I didn't mean to say, I was just doing an audio test.
Nigel Devereaux says, Colchester's first goal was shocking from our point of view. Take the foul and move on, but we just allowed the player to guide past us, no problem. A couple of others coming through. Do you have a list of players contracted for next season? No, Simon, but Cod Almighty always do a great contract tracker that you could check on.
I can tell
Grimbo
you
wants to know, who do you want to go up from the National League playoffs? Grimbo, can you tell me who is in the National League playoffs and then I'll give you an idea?
The National League don't know who's in the National League playoffs.
Oh, that's an absolute farce. So those of you who haven't caught up on it, Gateshead, who I am not a massive fan of, I still haven't got over that playoff semi-final defeat where 15,000 Geordies turned up pretending to be Gateshead fans. They're not allowed to go up because their stadium's a shithole and they can't secure a 10-year lease on the stadium.
It's not even that. They've got a 10-year lease. They couldn't secure it before March. It's as simple as that. They didn't secure that it in time. It's ridiculous.
Karmic retribution. Well, I guess they lost their club, so I assume they got the retribution then. But I don't mind being in debt to it. No sympathy. I saw him throw himself to the floor. That second yellow for Scott Nielsen or whatever it was. No, absolutely.
Craig Baxter, it was called, who sent himself into orbit. Not even a second yellow. It was a straight red. It was the worst decision I've ever seen, bar that Sutton thing. I'm still not got over it now. 10 years on and I'm still furious. I can see it right in front of me now. He screamed and he just...
Thank you, angry AI.
Am I being slightly biased that I think Widrington's or Aldershot should have been in there instead of a team getting a bye?
Well, as someone who lives here, but the problem is that they lost to Dorking and they lost to somebody else in the bottom. You can't do that when you're on that sort of run. We all know what it's like. There's no forgiveness. You just have to keep going. And I do feel sorry for Tommy and the team because I can understand, I'll be honest, there are a couple of people in the Aldershot team I would quite like us to have. So I imagine they're going to get picked apart.
Yeah, Tommy, if you're listening, don't accept any calls from the Grimsby area code.
Yep, no, thank you, Tommy. I've already given them a report on who to get. And I assume you'll just come back and go, mate, they've already gone. it's a shame. Let's have a quick look, see if anybody... Grimbo says, in the playoffs are Bromley, Barnet, Solihull, Halifax or Alty? Shall I go for Bromley? I wouldn't mind a bit of ag.
I'd love Bromley, just if it had, like, there'd be two weekends of the year where we could just wind you up and just let you go off about him.
Oh, could you imagine that?
Sorry, I've been asked to make a point, actually. They are building a roof for the away end, which means at least when we lose next year, Alex, you won't get piss wet through again.
I'll just be there off. I will spend the entire game, especially if we're behind there, just offering him a pie throughout the half.
There's a lot of speculation he's going to go to Stevenage, though, isn't there, apparently?
That would be a match made in heaven, wouldn't it?
Basically, they're the same manager, aren't they? Overweight.
They don't need to change the outfit.
Hey, hang on. Not all fat people are the same, Sam.
Yeah.
That's like isn't it was...
completely horrible.
That's right.
I'll be in the running next.
To watch.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, I would quite like Barnet, obviously, is a good away day. I don't want Solihull. I don't want Alty. I guess you guys up near Grimsby wouldn't mind Halifax. I would give my right arm for the pontoon to be there away end.
Anybody had Halifax. I hate them. Our record is terrible there. We never did anything against them. Keep them down.
Let's go with Barnet or Bromley then. What are we going with? I'm going with Barnet because then we can all do another weird away day, shall we?
Anyone but bloody Bromley.
I'd like Barnet because it's a decent away day.
There we go. There we are. So Barnet, we'd like Barnet. And I think they've been all right this season, haven't they? Anyway, there are those guys coming through. We've done that part. Have we done Crewe? Have we done Swindon? I'm thinking of shit teams in Division 4 in red. Have we done the review of the Swindon game?
We usually lose, so...
There's not much more to say, is there? It was a poor game. We took some chances when we got on second half. We're staying in the league. It's about it, isn't it?
Massive props to everybody who went. Blundell Park, once again, packed to the rafters. Been served up nothing more than tripe all season. 440 of you going to Colchester. What was the attendance yesterday, Mike? Sam? I'm not sure.
6-4. Apparently our average attendance this season is higher than it was last season. Laughably.
Yeah. It's incredible, the dedication that fans are showing. That if we could do that as a player of the season, the fans would be my player of the season. It's been outstanding. It really has. And massive, massive, you know, respect to everyone to go. Word on John Tonda leaving, of course. The voice of the Mariners is hanging up his microphone after 40 years. And I can only give my respects to the man. It has been... terrifying at times listening to him because he always makes it sound like the ball is on the Grimsby goal line, even if it's kickoff. He's been my voice as well.
I'm so pleased. You know, it's going to be really weird listening to Town commentary without him. But I'm so pleased a couple of years they started letting you go to France to watch the games, because when I used to listen just to John, I just had this vision they were passing it along our 6-yard line for 90 minutes. But I think that just shows you, though, how much of a fan he is. He's like all of us, you know, there's the emotion in it and what have you. You know, he's not immune to it.
I have that Simpsons, you know, when they're doing that whole, the halfback passes to center, and then they go to the Latin American commentator who's like, no. that's what Tunder is to me. I'm also really glad that he was given a really nice send off by Jason and the board and the club. He was given, I think it looked like a picture of lots of different programs on the front, because I think I made the comment before, but how much I would try my best to not look ungrateful if all they did was give me a signed shirt from this season's squad. Could you imagine 40 years, the players he's had to watch, and he's got Rob Mularkey signing on his shirt for all the hard work he's done?
Do you know, there is a couple of Tonderisms I'll miss, though, like halfway,
yeah.
Yeah.
There was a great comment on the Fishy this week about that someone said he might come back for a few games. Someone quote tweeted with the only half away, which that made me chuckle that day.
That's very good. That, could you imagine? I think John Tonder needs some walk-on music. So like, you know, WWE style. So that when he is commentating, they can treat on. That's Tonder's music. It could be something really, really weird. Like, I like to teach the world. That'd be amazing. Bobby, no, I'm not taking up. I have no idea who might be doing it. It might be Matt Dean. I would, you know, he's of our parish, but I'd quite like Scott to do it because he's very good as well.
I mean, could you imagine you doing it? Could you just, like, let's just avoid the fact it's on the BBC and the swearing, but do you think the commentator on the radio should be saying, well, he's shit, and what's he doing? He's shit.
What would you do if we played Bromley, Mike?
And the Grimsby Town commentator has left his commentary box and is hitting Andy Woodman over the head with his microphone.
And he can fuck off as well.
it would be like that video, wouldn't it? Get him off. What's that one? I can't speak. Who's the bloke from the rugby league commentary?
It was diabolical. Get the dirty, get off.
Send him off. That was diabolical. Send him off. It's a disgrace.
I've already sworn on Humberside and I haven't even commentated.
You dickhead Woodman. Because I love you, Alex, but you can be one of the most ranty people I know.
Could you imagine? It's a pre-season friendly against Cleethorpes. Can you calm the fuck down, please? Oh, Wayne Clark with a beauty. John Tonder's walk-on music should be Half the World Away.
Yeah.
Half Away. There we go. Perfect. Mark says, yes, I do wish all commentators would say players are shit rather than being democratic. Would make it much better to listen to. We'll do an alternative one day, Mark, if we get bored. But we did it once and we got relegated, so maybe let's not do that again.
Can we do it in the style of the Spanish commentary they used to do on Soccer AM?
Go, 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 go! God, I'd be waiting to pull...
With this
team, we'd be waiting for weeks to do the go, 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 go thing, wouldn't we?
Sorry, but actually, we did it. So, oh, sorry, we can't start the second half commentary yet. Bruce is still in the pub.
Do you know what? We made this. We didn't make it for Max Croker. We made it for Max Wright. After he scored against Wrexham, I thought his season would explode. So we made it for him. And we never got to play it.
He's doing all right, Halifax. So he's got a screamer.
He's doing all right. He's not bad for a man who's made of glass, is he? I wish he had my knees. He'd be great. Yeah. That's that part of it. We done. Shall we go? What else we got to talk about? Now, Mike won't let me slag them all off.
We could talk about what Jason said on Humberside yesterday, his program notes. There was a bit of discussion about that on the
back. Yo, actually, there's something on the chat. So let me find that and prompt it, because Graham is a bit worried. So he said,
Well, I can understand.
Jason Stockwell's interview with John Tondo is mind-boggling. So, Sam, I wasn't too worried about it. I thought he was just talking in relation to other teams. I didn't think he meant that our budget is in terrible, in comparison to what we had this year or so on. Mike is giggling. Let's go to him.
That's the comment. This is from Richard.
Okay. All right, this is what has got Mike wetting himself. Richard Young says, imagine John Moore attempting radio commentary, minutes of silence, followed by a random crikey, followed by, well. And then Richard, he screams so loud into his microphone, it just... Andrew says, it'll be that fellow who did commentary, town commentary with Compass. Yes, Scott, Andrew. He comes on the podcast. He's really nice. He'd be good. When the opposition scored, Tonda's tone was like the ball had dribbled out for a corner. My favourite, Nigel, was that the Notts County fans picked it up when it was that game in the National League and we needed to win, and then they scored in the last minute. You know, we'd played all right and then they nicked it, and he just went, yep. That was it.
I think there was another guy that did Compass. He was an older fella and he always used to say the heads go up. Like, I always had this vision of they're just like chucking their heads up on a stick at a corner or something.
That's a rather brutal image.
I never listened to the commentary on Compass. I can't.
You weren't alive, were you?
Well, there we go. Sam has just stopped talking all of a sudden to do that. We will have a 9-second break, we will then come back and talk about the FA, shall we? What were you going to say, Mike?
Well, we did say we're going to talk about Stockwell, and then we started laughing at Richard's comment.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got distracted. We are fucking terrible. Right. Okay. Oh. So, Stockwell's interview. If you haven't listened to it, it's linked on the BBC Humberside on Twitter, X, whatever you call it. Well worth having a look at. Any takeaways from that, Mike? I wasn't too worried about the budget comment. I just assumed he meant in others, but I'm looking at the teams that are going to be in the league. I'm sure there's going to be less teams that have got those massive budgets, aren't they? With no Wrexham, Stockport, yeah. Mansfield and MK Dons have all got a bit of cash behind them, haven't they?
Yeah, it didn't worry me. I mean, people could interpret things different ways, so it's not I could be wrong and they could be right. But I mean, the comments about the budget, I just interpreted that as the shortfall because he was talking about the deal that the EFL's getting and the money not coming through. So there is a black hole for all football clubs in the EFL, and I think that's what he was referring to. In terms of everything else...
Need to take me through that because I have no idea about this. Go on.
So when he said, we've looked at the budgets for next year, and if we're in this league, it's terrible, and if we're in the next league, it's horrendous. And I interpreted that as that's the black hole they're going to have to fill, like they have every year, because the EFL and the Premier League are still negotiating for the redistribution model. That figure's not been agreed. So until that is, there is a shortfall in a lot of clubs' finances. So that's what I took that comment to mean. I think he said it's not an existential threat. So that's why I took it that way. It just means they're going to have to put more money in, which is something I think as a fan base we should remember. You know, football, unless you're at the top divisions, and, you know, even then it's a rarity, you're not in it to make money. You're in it to lose money. And try and make something you enjoy. So we sort of got to remember it's their money. They're just ploughing into our club. But in terms of everything else he said, made a lot of sense to me. It seems that Paul Hurst was given a lot of sort of rope, and he eventually hung himself with it in terms of bringing in players and playing to a style and it not happening. So he took some ownership of that. Was very keen to say there was no... criticism of Joe Hutchinson, and that Joe was sort of working to order in the players he was bringing in. They were what he was told to bring in. So I think from the sounds of it, they've learned an awful lot from that season, from the issues with Paul Hurst and the recruitment. And I would be quite positive that we'll see a bit of a change in that. They talk an awful lot, and David Artell does, about it being a collaborative effort in terms of transfer windows and not no blames on one person. So hopefully... we can take some learnings from it. They are new to football ownership. And thankfully, we've not gone out of the league, but we'll be able to take a lot of learning from this year. And I just think transfer windows and style of play and finance is where we'll take the most learnings from.
From the interview, he all but blamed Hurst for where we were and put the almost the responsibility that the, and you know, you can't disagree with that. We've been strong defenders of Hurst. He's done quite a lot for this club, but the players he signed this year have not been adequate and they haven't been up to it. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure why that's happened, but you can't disagree with that. I don't know about you guys.
It's unless Sam's got something. I don't know if he's there or not.
I am here. Yeah, I'm just listening.
I was just going to say, in terms of bringing in players, it's something we've discussed quite a bit this season. As individually, especially at the start of the season, you looked at most of the players that came in and you thought they were an improvement, and it just hasn't worked putting them all together. He came up with an analogy about ingredients for a meal, and you're cooking the wrong meal with the wrong.
Yeah, he basically turned into James Acaster doing the Celebrity Bake Off.
But you know, that makes sense to me. All these players, if you went through them individually, there's not many I'd say they're shocking or to the level we've had before. But I think just as a whole, they don't work. But they just don't work. You've had them a season, they don't work. Thank you very much. Off you go. But as a collective, they don't work together. And I think that's a very good sort of way to look at it from Jason. Is we've gone out and bought what we thought was better, but we haven't been working to the right sort of recipe for what we want to do on the pitch. And he used the expression with Paul, is that we kept being promised it was coming, and it never did. And I think that's where we were at the time Paul Hurst left. Absolutely. Was like, where's this, you know, we've brought in these good players, why are we not playing this good football? And it never happened.
It was fairly clear from what I heard about it that the sort of, I don't know whether it's an extreme thing to say this, but I think if they had their time again, they may well have dispensed with Hurst a lot more quickly than they had done, because they sort of basically said that Hurst wanted to, the analogy I think more was kind of like Hurst wanted to bake bread, knew how to bake bread, but the owners told him that to basically bake a cake instead, and he tried to, but he went up to it. And as a result, we end up with this hodgepodge of a squad where we've got a few sort of flary players with sort of grafters and gritters, and you've ended up with this.
Yeah, and
fiery take on Hurst as town manager. Either way, what I would say is it's kind of, we're all very good all here laying into Paul Hurst. We've got
laying into him. We're just dictating back the interview.
But to say, basically blaming Hurst then for all that's gone wrong. We've not heard his side of the story. We've only heard one side of the story of making our own corruption. So, yeah, people go up throats, oh, Sam just loves Hurst. But I mean, when I say that, but
I mean, a little bit.
Do you need to hear his side of the story, Sam? We all watched this side of the story for, what, about 15, 20 games. It was quite
Don't make me watch this season again.
No, but we don't.
As the most pro-Hurst fan... Was even in the headspace that he had somewhere.
Shall we? Sam's going to do some more loving for Hurst. Go on, Sam. We'll give you the time to do it. Sorry.
But not in the terms of the games. The games weren't good enough, and that's why he was shown the door. I want to the reasons behind how we came to that. And Jason's basically saying we should have gone down this route, the kind of game model and the data. And that's what he's saying. Has Hurst got a different side to that? Does Hurst think that he wasn't given enough autonomy? We don't know all these things, do we? We've heard their side of the story. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying it's all very one-sided and a bit harsh to kind of, it's easy for us to sort of blame the man who isn't here.
Well, I mean,
he needs a fair hearing rather than everybody just kind of saying, oh, it's all down to bloody Hurst, which...
Well, no, I think he's had a fair hearing. I don't think anybody's been too critical of him. We've said it went wrong and we thanked him for everything he's done, but it happens in football. It goes wrong. Now, if he didn't have enough autonomy, that basically means he's having players signed from him that he didn't want. Now, are you saying that Paul Hurst, and A, wouldn't even, say that, and B, would still be here if that was the case?
And didn't Jason also say, we leave the football stuff to Paul?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he did, but he's kind of the program notes I thought contradicts that a little bit by basically saying that it sort of said we should have basically, what he said is we should have insisted on this game model that he kept referring to.
But that's how football is now, Sam. That's how football is. Most clubs that do well and do well consistently, especially underdog clubs, know what they are. You know, so if you think of a Brighton or a Brentford or teams like that, you know, they recruit, they use data because that's how they get an edge. And most football teams play to a consistent formula.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Ago, I'm saying it's to do with what I'm saying it's to do with did they leave footballing matters to Paul?
Of course they did. Paul Ernst wouldn't have stayed.
Can I also ask a question? Can I ask a question as well? If every team is using data, how are we anyway ahead?
They're not.
We're just on the same level as everybody else, aren't we?
Yeah, but they're not using data.
Most of them are, aren't they?
No, but it costs a lot of money to use it well.
I think most teams use data now.
Telling me some of these teams in League Two are using data as well as they should?
Are Forest Green using data?
Probably not.
Come on, the money that Dale Vince is putting in, you don't think they're using data?
Well, he made quite a big statement about how he just trusted the managers to make the signings over the last 2 years, and that now he's got Steve Cotterill. Steve Cotterill will be the person that's responsible just for
getting the players. Isn't that quite a similar conversation that Jason's just had? Isn't that what he was saying?
Well, no, because what our style or how we want to play football, it doesn't matter who the manager is. We want to play a certain way, and we have people in recruitment, we have people in the coaching staff to play that way. And then you're hoping that your youth team levels are going to get players and mould them into a way that plays that way. If you just keep changing your manager every year, what you're saying is, right, don't care how you want to play football. You want to play football that way? Right, go and sign another 20 players that will play that way. And we've done that consistently for years. We had that with, you know, we had that with Big Knot, Slade, Jolly, Holloway.
Can I,
managers play football completely differently.
Aren't we about to just do that again?
No, because we brought a manager in to do the way we want to.
I guess the point, the argument against what I'm going to make is that, well, if we could stick to our convictions and then the next manager after Artell is exactly the same, but we are just about to do exactly the same thing we've done where we've got all Hurst players, we're going to get rid of Hurst players and we're going to bring in new players. Now, we're going to do it under a different model, but that's no different to what we've done before, is it?
No.
And my argument is... Yeah. I would say 80% of clubs use data. It depends on what data you're using, I guess. You know, let's go down the whole Moneyball route where you're looking for the on-base percentage, that magic number that can show you. And then you've then also got to look at the characteristics and the personality of the player. And that's David Artell's job to do that.
And there's also an argument, isn't there, to say that it's quite a kind of miserable one, this. But if everybody's using data, as you sort of said, and then we're still Grimsby with a pretty sort of lower half mid-table budget, out on a limb in the middle of nowhere, why do we save the money on using the data and give it to the manager to kind of spend? Because we're still going to be kind of faced with the same issues where otherwise just it's the same level play, it's the same playing field, it's just different.
No, because it doesn't. I mean, firstly, in terms of if everybody does data, then we have to do it to be on the same level. Now, you will not convince me.
I'll agree that
you're not convinced me that other teams do it. I'm sorry, I don't think they do. I think the investment we've had off the pitch in this side of things is probably what Jason and Andrew think is going to be the thing that progresses us, getting that little bit of a head start and getting us up the league by having that niche that other teams don't have. And also in terms of what you said, Alex, about we've done it before. Well, yes, that is true. We've done it before, but this is different wherein we've never said we want to play football this way. We've just moved from manager to manager. Hurst to Artell is the first change they've made. And at the start of that journey, they tried to enforce a way of playing football. That didn't work. And they've changed the manager into that. Instead of just bringing in, like, if they brought in a Cowley in January, then that's just a massive change. What they've done is, we've got rid of the manager that can't work to this specification. So the next manager we're going to get is going to be able to work to this specification. It's the first bit of the journey. They've not been doing it for 10 years and keep getting it wrong. It's the first change they've made.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just playing devil's advocate on this one. I don't want you to get upset about it.
Outside now.
Fight. But yeah, I think I don't agree with you. I think most players use data to some degree. We might have more data than anybody else. You know, we might have found, you know, Joe Hutchinson or the data guy in there might have found an incredible OBP thing, doing the whole Moneyball thing with, and he's working with Michael Barry and everybody else and he's just has got it sorted and we're going to have this incredible thing where we bring in a load of players who look like they can't play football and can. But it'll be interesting to see. It feels a bit like the B Corp thing, which it helps solidify and support what we're doing, but it isn't a destination, if that makes sense. It's just part of the journey.
Just one last quick thing is I think the middle ground here is that most teams probably do use data to a point. What I think we're trying to do is use it more. So we've brought in the 21st group. You know, so we've brought in an outside agency. We've brought in a director from Saudi Arabia who works in this field. So I don't see a lot of League Two teams going that far down it.
I kind of want to come off this as well because we need to talk about the FA thing. But they were talking about the step change part of it. Was anyone else in my thought process, are they leading their way towards a director of football? Because Dave Artell kind of supported that by saying, you know, I don't want to be just the one person. Sam, what were you going to say?
He alluded to that when the kind of, when Artell was appointed, he was asked, is it a case that Artell's a head coach and why is Artell a head coach and not a manager, and a very clear sort of, position change from Hurst being the manager. And he basically said they're going down the director of football route is a kind of long-term ambition, is the expression he used. So maybe we are in a situation where a director of football, or maybe the director of football is the head of recruitment and we're just kind of giving different head titles. But this is the way the game's going, isn't it?
I've got no problem with that. One of the reasons being is, say, if Artell does a fantastic job and he goes tomorrow, it's only him going. He hasn't brought his own team in. So Ben and Sean are still here. Joe's still here. You know, if there's a director of football, they're still here. So very similar to how Swansea succeeded, you know, in the early 2000s, when their manager goes, like Brendan Johnson, when he went and alike, there was still the main structure there. And then either you promote from within, which is also they've alluded to in the past with Ben and Sean, and the whole structure and the ethos is still there.
Or Brighton operate now, whereby all the players in the recruitment structure didn't leave, and Deserby has barely been noticeable in terms of standard drop off and all the player sales as well.
Can I just say as well, I'm not usually good at defending people, but I think Joe Hutchinson gets quite a lot of stick. No one else in that club. No one is going. What's the name of the strength and conditioning coach? Considering we've got, you know, eighth in the first half, and then rock bottom in the second half. No one, I don't know his name, and I'm, you know, an above average reader of content of Grimsby Town. But Joe Hutchinson, who provides Greg Howard, thank you, mate. Shake your leg, Greg, Jesus. And then, you know, Joe, he proposes players. It's the manager's decision to make those calls. It's like providing someone with a shortlist for Football Manager, and then you pick players that are different. You know, I just think he gets quite a lot of stick.
I defended him last season, this season I'll continue to do, you know. I know we want to move on to the FA Cup, but just briefly, I think we decided that probably only Conte looked about the only signing that Hurst hadn't had a relationship with, and Hurst previously said he didn't know about him. Now you look at that signing, might not have worked on the pitch, but it's brought us a lot of money off the pitch. And then Artell said, the signings we brought in January were on the list already, and he went over them and he decided which ones to get. So the work's already been done. And every signing we've brought in, maybe a little question mark over Hume, but I don't think he's been terrible. I think every signing we've brought in has been decent. So, you know, full credit to him.
And Dave Smith then just saying, look, Stockwell said in the pre-interview on Saturday that Joe was no way culpable for the summer's problem agreement. And I probably agree with you there, David. And I just think, you know, people have asked, who do you lay the blame? I think someone came up with a question, but I won't scroll through. Sorry. So I miss you. I apologise. Who came and said, look, who do you blame for this season? I mean, I'll be honest. Paul Hurst has got to take a lot of the blame, and the players have got to take a lot of the blame, because, again, we will have this conversation next week, but I'll keep bringing it back to it. We have only, the season in 2009, 2010, they got 43 points and spent most of that season, by their own admission, pissed off their heads. And we've got 6 points more than that so far, with all the money, all the resources, everything that's available to them and what they can avail themselves to. The players have just not been anywhere good enough. And I think a lot of Town fans have got fed up of that shit. And I think these players are treated harsher than, you remember how adoring people were of Peacock and of Conlon and whatever. I think Town fans have got sick of that shit and have just gone, look, if you're just like, there is a little bit, we keep getting it as well, going, are you off the leash? Are you going to talk about it? You know, are you going to talk about it? I think there are going to be players that get, in comparison to that, undue stick, but I still think they do deserve a lot of grief. But there we go. That's the closest I'm going to go to going off on one today, Mike.
Okay. FA Cup. Then we'll go off on that.
Yeah. My dad is coming in saying there is something seriously wrong with the infrastructure of the players, training staff and other. We'll find out, shall we, Dad? You can see where I get my rantiness from. Nigel says transfer window signings were data driven and most have been decent and good, better than what we had. And again, I think Artell has earned the right to build a team in his own image. I think Thompson is a big reason behind that. I'm not as sold on Tharm as you are, Mike, mostly because I saw Johnny Kinnear run past him.
You're wrong.
I'm fine. That's fine. We'll have that fight. I'm sure he's going to be great. He looks a bit too much like Lance Stroll, I think. That's what's getting... He looks
probably
a bit
can drive better, though.
A combination of Lance Stroll and Michael McIntyre.
Yeah, let's talk about the FA Cup. So for those of you who haven't seen, and I'll be surprised if you haven't, so there are probably bits I'm missing, but the headline parts are leagues one and the rounds one and two will no longer have replays. The Premier League, the FA Cup will no longer be the last domestic game of the season. It will be the penultimate, it'll be before the penultimate game of, no, the last game of the Premier League. And in return, the EFL are going to get a £33 million for grassroots football, whatever that means. And from the statements that have come out from a lot of clubs, excluding Wrexham, and Wrexham fans are annoyed about that, but if you've got Sean Harvey in the building, what do you can expect? It doesn't sound like anyone was... in the EFL was really asked about it and queried about it. And we've come to this point now where there is a lot of anger. I would say it's on the same level as the European Super League. And our club, I've got to say, and I'm proud to say, we're kind of leading the way both with the statement that the club put out and also with fans. Maybe it's just because I'm living in an echo chamber, but, you know, Town fans seem to be very strong on this, and I think they always are. So massive respect to them. So it'd be great to get your thoughts on that as well. On both, on, you know, who's listening live. What are your thoughts, Mike, on it? And we can go from there.
Well, anybody that follows me on Twitter probably knows, probably haven't got long enough for my thoughts. I've been ranting about it ever since it happened. But one thing I'd like to get out of the way straight away is this extra £33 million for grassroots football is still below the level of funding that they should be doing anyway. I think they had an agreement about 10, 15 years ago. They've never paid what they should be paying. So it's below that, you know, so they're wanting credit for giving us money that they should be giving anyway. Secondly, I think it's a really cynical ploy by the FA getting involved in this and there being no consultation. I think it's a bigger issue, less to do with player welfare. I think that's a nonsense because it never happens. And it's,
well, for example, Spurs and Newcastle are playing in Melbourne 3 days after the Premier League finishes.
That isn't the actual reason. I think that's a convenience thing to point to. What I think the reason is, as we discussed earlier, the EFL and the Premier League are still in negotiations about the distribution deal, and one of the limited options and sort of fed arrows that we have in our backpack is that we had those replays those replays to negotiate with, right? And that negotiating chip has just been taken away by the FA and the Premier League without any consultation. I think that's actually what it's all about. There's a lot of landing ground between where we were last week with what the setup was and where we are now. There's lots of different things you can do before one extreme to the other. So there was a deal to be made there. But fundamentally, for the FA that are meant to be in charge of the game as a whole and look after and be the guardians of football, to enter this debate on one side and unilaterally tell the rest of football who own football, it's not the Premier League, it's not the Big Six, it's not people in Texas and Saudi Arabia that own it. We own it. It's for everybody. To come in and just take something away again, like they consistently do. You know, they waltz in, it's our game, we'll do what we want. Well, no. And it's about time, and I hope this happens, it's about time football fans and football clubs say, right, we've put up with loads over the years and you've got away with it. And this is a line that we won't let you go over. You cannot just waltz into the game of football from America or from Saudi Arabia and tell us this is how it's going to be. No, this is our game and we'll tell you how it's damn well going to be. replays are an integral part of the FA Cup. I've heard pundits this weekend say it's the best competition in the world. And then the second breath say, well, it's the only one that still has replays. Well, sometimes the uniqueness of that is what contributes to it. If you make it the same as every other cup, it's the same as every other cup. So I'm fuming about it.
I think, and it's not to mention,
yeah,
because we both watched that Rest His Football piece. And I've got to say, I can't really talk about an awful podcast, but I do find that the worst of the podcasts, the mainstream. I like the Guardian one. I like the Football Ramble one. I listened to a couple of others as well, but that one just feels, you know, the green room of Match of the Day. And it was so appalling the way they talked about it. They didn't understand. And I don't think anybody understands it. We're talking about rounds one and two. This does not affect Premier League teams.
Yeah.
It's all that boat has already sailed. There's no replays for quarterfinals. There's no replays for the fifth round. Third and fourth rounds are the only two rounds now where you get replays. That's
and
it.
The They're big European gone. Teams not in from the third and fourth round, are they? Don't they come in at the fifth?
No, they come in the third round. But he's ruined it now. He's coming across as so professional, like he knew his stuff. Anyway, yeah,
the league, you ever think of the League Cup, mate, where the European team's coming in the third round and the yeah. Premier League non? Yeah, I can.
But one thing I would say about you know that Rest His not Rest His Politics, Rest His Football podcast, and a lot of
the Rest His Premier League pundits,
Premier League pundits and whoever is. I don't know about everybody else, but as a lower league football fan, I'm damn well sick of Premier League fans and pundits telling the rest of football what it is they want, saying, oh, we'll just give you some more money, you'll be fine, and that'll be better for you. You know what? Don't speak for us. Let us speak for ourselves and let us tell you what we want. You know, we're not children. You don't need to decide what's best for us. We've looked after football for 100 years. We don't need you to tell us what we want. Let us tell you what we're having.
And the problem is that we get into that point where you're talking about bargaining chips where we've got none left. You know, we've already, the EFL trophy wasn't massive, but when you got towards Wembley, as we all know, is incredible. They've already, you know, tainted that competition and we can't do anything about that. People say chuck the teams out of the B team. It won't matter. If we come to this negotiation period, it'll be even worse. But it is just a sad indictment of where we are, where we're running out of reasons to do it. And football, Danny Baker is brilliant to follow, but it is just that power constraint is only ordained by us and given it to them. We saw how quickly the European Super League fell apart when people actually stood up to it. It would break my heart, but I would be absolutely up for the club saying, look, we are not taking part in the FA Cup and neither is anyone from the EFL. The only problem is, most of the championship clubs haven't released a statement. I think about seven of them have. Mike, you might be able to tell us more. But, you know, it's not enough to really... But again, if, you know, non-league teams and lower league teams said, look, we're not going to do it, you can have a smaller version of the League Cup and see if the magic is still there, then we can go and do our own thing.
As long as enough lower league teams, not the championship, do it, then the championship teams and maybe big League One teams end up in the position where they're going to say, are we on the side of the rest of football over here or are we on the side of the Premier League over here? And the pressure from their fan bases, et cetera, will probably put them that way and to save face probably come along. But one thing I would say, it's always funny to see what teams and what fans who we were all with during the Super League debacle, which obviously was an existential threat to British football, but it also was to their teams. And now the rest of football need them. They try and tell you what's best for you. You know, well, it was a different story when your teams were trying to play in a European Super League, wasn't you? And you weren't moaning about game amount of games then, or now you're playing Bulgaria's fourth team twice now and got some extra games. You're not complaining about that one. You're complaining about once every 10 years you might have to play a replay because you can't beat Shrewsbury away from home.
And it's not even that, though, because it doesn't involve them. It's what seems to be happening is the Premier League are making room at the end of the season, and what they're doing is they're saying it is about the players' health, the players' welfare. They can get 6 weeks off. They can get 3 weeks off until the international tournament. What I think is going to end up happening is the Premier League clubs initially will go off and do pre-season tours in the Middle East, in America, make some money spinning games like that. But I think ultimately what will end up happening is you're making room for either a version of the Super League, which is a three-week tournament, or some sort of three-week tournament that is going to be for the Premier League, where they do something like the Nations League. They divide the Premier League into four four groups of five, and then they all play a final in Saudi Arabia and make a load of crap money. I think that's what that is ending up going to go to be, all at the detriment of everybody else. You think of all the things that lower league teams have lost as the Premier League makes more money. No longer, down south especially, Woking and Aldershot used to always get friendlies with Chelsea pre-season, which would allow them to make a load of cash, and then they could always, you know, they could always use that money. They bought, Woking bought their floodlights with it from a Chelsea game. They've gone because they all go off into the Middle East. That's, I mean, that's their own prerogative. They can do it, but that's one thing they've lost. They've lost money from the Bosman thing. They've lost, you know, the academy players because there's no rights to that in the National League. We've found out in our own past. You don't have, you know, we've now got the B teams in the European, in the Football League Trophy. The Premier League was increased because, you know, they won't play 24 games. They'll play 20 games, and it will mean that the England team have got better time to rest. They're, you know, the 3 p.m. kickoff will change at some point soon. Absolutely, because that's all you hear. And sooner or later, it's going to be gone. And there are parts of me now, and I'm saying it without a, you know, a dog in the fight. I'm not employed by football. I don't, it doesn't feed my family. If we all turn around tomorrow and went, we don't need you, fuck off, we'll create our own thing. You can have the Premier League, 20 teams, no changes, all the same teams, you know, and we will go and do our own thing. We won't have your money. We'll be like the 1950s over again. Players will get paid a lot less, but they'll play for the fans. They'll play for the joy of playing at football like every kid used to. And if we need to make that step change, I would be all for it. But I know it would never happen because that would take a hell of a lot of bollocks and a lot of planning to do so.
We should have done that when the Super League came along. It sounds daft, this, but the sort of... The
they didn't get punished.
Was allowing the Super League to be stopped. We should have let the Super League happen, but sort of Kerry Packer them and say, right, okay, so you're not playing in the Premier League, your players aren't playing for their countries, you aren't playing, so basically you will be locked out of the footballing world. And then if they were, if they made it work, good, fair play to them, but if they can't come back unless they kind of get their tail very firmly between their legs. Do you not think, but there's a sort of part of me here that's sort of like, it's a sort of like, I've not run out of energy with it, but I've sort of like, that it was inevitability to this.
It's always this sort of thing, isn't it? It's always that. And it's just, I can understand why you
need to sort of put up a fight, but we're kind of like, you talk about it, we just need to get it back, just use it as a negotiating chip when the next EFL deal comes along. And you said there's more money floating around in the top, in the lower leagues than there has ever been before, because they just kind of keep giving us more and more money. We should refuse the money when they offer us kind of TV rights, the TV money, because they can, you can use it to kind of bounce up and down like a basketball, can't they?
I think it would have been a bit harsh to do that to them. Some, not for the club's sake. I mean, I'm, you know, some of those teams I can live without quite easily. But there is, whilst they have a lot of international fans, there is a lot of fans at those clubs which would be in the same boat as us. And I always think of that as like their fans didn't want that to happen. So I don't think the rest of football should have abandoned them when their teams were pretty much being stolen. But now the boot's on the other foot. All the other fans have got to stand with the rest of football. And I honestly, I feel so passionate.
They don't know.
About this.
They don't. With the amount of shit we get when we were talking about how many games.
Yeah.
We talked about Grimsby Town playing 59 games last season, Arsenal playing 49. Wow, the game isn't as intense. You know, fucking running is running, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't have the squad sizes. Yeah.
But we've got to play the same team. This player welfare thing is a load of bollocks. It really is. It's just the excuse to use. But then if you want to look at that, right? Well, how many academy players you've got? How many £30 million players have you got out on loan
to give
game time? You know, you've got a personal chef. You can afford a driver. You can afford
Arsenal team.
You don't have to do a thing.
Yeah. No Arsenal player played more than 24 games last season.
Yeah. And you can't play football. You know what? Give it up and work in the bank. Go work in the bank then if you don't like playing football, because there's a lot of other people that will play football
every
day.
Every time I hear Pep Guardiola, he doesn't seem to enjoy football. He's like, oh, I've got another fucking game to do. What's that? You're fucking getting paid to do it. Do it.
Oh, my heart, please. Oh, my God.
His justification for that was a disgrace yesterday. Saying,
and I'll tell you something, Sam, as a Liverpool fan, your mate is just as fucking bad. I'm glad Klopp is leaving. He is awful for this game. He's awful for the British game.
I'm not glad he's leaving, but he's a big factor in this, isn't it? In that basically he eroded the game as it is, got rid of FA Cup. He couldn't even be bothered to turn up for a replay against Shrewsbury a few years ago, which I thought was bang out of order. So
he could take his five subs with him as well.
Yeah, well, but when we used to be under Hurst, we never used them anymore.
Told us all to piss. Right. Clipperty's exit, but it's not just him, is it? It's Guardiola and the big boys above it. But Clipperty's got a right to defend his team. The issue is allowing it to happen. Shouldn't be allowed to happen.
No, he doesn't have any right to moan the way he moans. How many players do Liverpool have on the books?
Klopp come in, spat his dummy out, got what he wanted, and now he's fucking off Bellend.
Well, you can't argue with the last bit, can you? That his legacy is destroying FA Cup replays, and now he's leaving.
If you don't want to be a footballer and you don't want to be a football manager, no bastard's making you. Go away, do something else. You know, there's people that work 40 hours a week, play 3 games a week, you know, and they're driving halfway across the country to play a game on a Tuesday night and they're up a scaffolding the next morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. They're fine. Get on with it.
And it's worth saying as well, lower league football is in rude health, and I don't think it is in any way a correlation to the Premier League success. The Premier League was starting to be a success in the mid-90s, from 96, 97 onwards. It was a massive success, as it was in the early noughties. You've just got to look at the attendances that we receive here at, you know, here in Grimsby, when we've gone from 3,000-4,000 in the Championship to 6,000-7,000 in Division 4. Football League in the lower leagues is in rude health. And if you look across the spectrum of attendances, they are all improving. Woking went from 1,300, because I used to live there, as an average attendance in the, you know, 2010, to 3,500-4,000 now. And it's well worth looking at that. And I think people are, it's one, a couple of things. People prefer lower league football because they get access to it. It's cheaper. They've actually got something to do on a Saturday. And I think a lot of people are getting fed up with the Premier League. And today was how perfectly encapsulated how important the magic of the FA Cup is than that Coventry City game when they were stolen it by Manchester United. How beautiful were they? Looked at that. Gregor Robertson put out an incredible tweet where the Coventry City fans are there still. 40,000 of them celebrating. Manchester United fans had fucked off back to make sure they watched Britain's Got Talent in Berkhamsted.
You know, we know that the Premier League is the best division in the world. It just is, factually. And you're quite right. That's got a lot to do with the pyramid. It's no coincidence. And every time you weaken the pyramid, you make us into becoming more and more like a lot of the other big divisions. You look at Spain, you look at Italy, you look at Germany. Other than the odd couple of teams in the second division, I'll give you that. Some of them have B teams in them. You know, and if you go down to the third division, you know, there's one man and a dog watching them play football. You know, you go down to the fifth division here sometimes. You've got Notts County, Wrexham. You've got 10,000-15,000 people that would go to it. They're not getting that in their second divisions. So if you want to make it more and more like those divisions, that's fine. But it ain't as good. You don't get as much money, and there ain't as many people watching it.
And I think ultimately
it turns into a de facto franchise doing that, doesn't it? If you kind of diminish the ability of the pyramid to fight back, and they will get B teams into the league if they're not careful.
This is what I think will end up happening. I think people will break away. The Premier League will create a Premier League and a Premier League 2. Premier League 2 will be full of the West Broms, the Southamptons, the Leicesters, the Leeds, Celtic and Rangers, and then also a smattering of the B teams. And then what will happen is the under 23s leagues that follow it will be that B team thing where if you finish in that, you'll get promoted into it and they'll remove the last under 23 team and stuff. That's what I think will end up happening. You'll get two leagues of 18 teams.
Sam will be able to speak better to this just because of what he does as a job, but I'd be surprised that once the regulator's in place, that that'll be something that can happen, which is why it's so important we get that regulator.
If that's it.
Well, I think there's consensus all across that it's going to come in. I can't see there's much opposition to it.
I've read the bill. Provided they don't amend the hell out of it, which, I mean, I can't see the Premier League lobbying people too much about that. We can really give it some teeth to stop things happening.
And when would that likely to go through for a hearing?
The second reading on Tuesday, Sam.
The second reading's on Tuesday. It will then go to committee state.
This is the bit where you sound third professional, so you've got to go back.
Sorry.
We lost you after second hearing.
Second reading on Tuesday. So it goes to the second reading on Tuesday, where it will get passed without amendment, no problem. It will then go to the report stage, sorry, committee stage, they'll then produce a report on it. There'll be a load of amendments come back with that about strengthening the bill. It will have a third reading to amend amendments are in place. Then it will go to the Lords and it will gain royal assent. Provided the election is not till the autumn, which is what we're expecting, it should get royal assent before the end of this Parliament.
Do you not still think it's relevant when the election is made because it's such a big thing and such a popular thing with a lot of people?
Well, no, it doesn't have to stop. Everything
that it would get through. Friday. It would get through before in the wash report. It'd get through before the Lord Parliament.
Yeah, so it'll come back in the next Parliament but it'll delay it a little bit. Won't it, if there is an election in the next
I personally, I think they'd speed it up because it's quite a, you know, look what we've given you, a football regulator.
It might literally be the best thing you've done, Sam.
Yeah, but that's going in. That's going from rest is football to rest is politics, isn't it? So,
we've had enough talk about Alistair Campbell on this podcast.
Not again.
I haven't even got you your book yet, Sam.
I've got in the Starmer one over here. I've just got to see him.
Are you just going to send me there on an election night while I'm in a leisure centre, just sending me kind of, and I get loads of alerts on my phone going, you have a book delivered to your house next week and so.
No, sir. As I've told you, Sam, we may take the piss, but I think that stops short of literally taking the piss out of your mate if he's losing his actual job. We will stop on the night, we promise you. We'll start a week after, but there'll be a brief period.
There we go. Anything anybody else wants to say about the FA thing? The only thing I say, fuck the Premier League. I hope they all burn down.
Fuck the FA.
Fuck the FA. Fuck the Premier League. And fuck the bald fraud Pep Guardiola. Let's be honest. He's only won anything because he's got the greatest player in the world. And then he had a dominant team like Bayern Munich. And then, you know, Man United with a petro state, Manchester City with a petro state money. And Chris Billingham wants a Twitter space on the night for Sam's election. Maybe we might have to
the absolute last thing I will be doing on election night is doing a Twitter space.
You like The Simpsons, right? You know all that sort of thing. What's the thing? It's like, if you stop it here, this is where you can see his heart actually breaking.
Oh, he doesn't have any hope, does he? This is like him going on a first date with, I'm going to go with Gwen Stefani. Shows where I'm putting.
Can I just point one thing out? You know when he was having a go at me earlier for saying, "Oh, maybe we should save the season review and things till next week," and I guess we got too much. And he was having a go. We've done an hour and 20 minutes without even talking, doing the last 10 bullshit minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Will you be doing the podcast when the season is finished? Says Martin. Maybe we got the European Championships, haven't we, to chat about? So at least we got something that we can do. We can do a bit of politics stuff to, you know, annoy Sam. We'll try and do something. I really want to get Grimsby Borough and Cleethorpes Town on and have a chat with them and the women's team. We've got some equipment.
Might have some interviews
and stuff on the road. Where? This is the last
Sam,
10 minutes.
Where? He needs a new job.
Sam, all right, fine. I thought you meant with players because that isn't happening. Bruce keeps just throwing names out there. Goes, have we got any of them? No. Yeah, well, there we go. Sam, have you got anything to say before we go?
No.
So there's 628 people listening for some reason. What is wrong with you all? Isn't Britain's Got Talent on? That might be why you're watching. Mike?
That's just anti-lunch watching. 650 though.
On six, you know, like when you see those Chinese social media farms where there's just one woman on a wheelie chair with loads of different phones. That's all it is. We've got them going for us big style.
With the amount of money she spends on Sam, she must have 650 tellies, the amount of money she's got.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, Sam.
Do you know what he said to us on Tuesday? We said, is auntie lunch with you? And he went, no. And we said, are you going to eat anything? And he went, well, I'll have to buy it myself then.
Oh, what did you go for, Sam? Quail's eggs.
I didn't go for quail's eggs. I went to Mackey's. I think I had one of those crispy deluxe things.
Oh, there we go.
One thing before we do go, very, very quickly, can I just point out that the people that want a new stadium by any means possible and anywhere, and it doesn't matter where, go to Colchester and tell me you want a brand new stadium, but in the arse end of nowhere, because it's depressing.
That would have been what the Great Coast Stadium is. Yeah, it was a shame.
Don't give me that. Booking car park with a McDonald's on it. No thanks. I'd rather have Blundell.
Didn't even have McDonald's, does it? The McDonald's is over the other side of the road.
Yeah, it's quite a walk. So, you know, at least if you have your big Mac, you can get some chips
Bruce,
off your hips.
Bruce says there's no laptops for sales. He's going to be moving on to something else. We do have prints for sale, though, and I think I'll put a discount on it. Have a look at them. If you like this little rotating picture you're seeing live of Blundell Park, we've got some of them up there. Please do buy them because it will pay off the printer and the paper and, you know, the drone we bought to do this bit.
There's an awful lot of outlay, wasn't there?
There was that printer was more expensive than I thought it was. And then, you know, ink's quite expensive, but it's do you know what? There's lots of people did it. I hope he doesn't mind, but Andrew Pettit bought one a couple of weeks ago. I thought, Andrew, you bought Danny Rose for us. I can probably send you a couple of prints for free. which is quite nice of him. But there we go. Thank you all so much for listening. It is really impressive. It is really, you know, the podcast keeps going from strength to strength. And I don't know why you like us listening to us. We're not experts. We're not, you know, we're just a couple of mates having a chat. But we're really keen on bringing people on as well. So if you want to, you know, if you've got a want to be a producer and you want to be in the background, you know, sorting stuff out, or if you want to have a go at having a chat on here and doing it, do drop us a DM or do drop us an email. We will happily have you on if you want to just test your skills. It might well be a half decent way to start and to understand how to use this stuff and everything. And we'd be really keen to get you on.
You can't be any worse than us.
You can't be any worse than us. And, at least you might reply to my Sunday call to arms when I ask who wants to be on the show.
Who's on Sunday?
Tumbleweed. Hello, Catherine. Nice to see you. How are you? That's my sister. I don't know anything else. We're saying like it's the end of the season. It's not. We will be back on Sunday. We will be at Crawley. Are you going to Crawley, Mike?
I am. I'm meeting you somewhere in Crawley.
I think we're going to do... I think we might
convenient.
Do a, yeah, we're hopeful. We'll meet in Gatwick. Gatwick Departures Lounge.
It's a good job this place we're meeting is in Crawley because it'd be a nightmare otherwise, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Sam, are you still alive?
Yes, I'm still here and I'm going to Crawley.
Good stuff. Maybe we should do... We're doing a London meetup. Maybe we should do it as a pod meetup instead as well and we'll get everybody there. At 12 o'clock
yeah, we'll outside. Get five people instead of four will turn up.
We'll get zero more people.
Can you remember when we did that cricket club thing at the start of the season? It was Hoddo turned up and there was nobody else. It was nice to do and it was really great to see everybody. I didn't think even Bruce wanted to come in, did he? He's like, I'm going to stay out here and watch the cricket.
Are we letting rip a bit on Sunday? Are we doing the whole season review?
I think we've abused players already, but I think it'd be nice to have an idea of where people finish and where, you know, what we think of them.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm not going to have a go, Gus. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm really not angry. Like, you've not been good enough, but you've kept us up. Thank you very much. Best of luck in the future, but bye. That's sort of where I am.
I do genuinely think it's the part that I've given, because we've been in this position so many times, these players are getting additional wrath from those players I didn't give it to.
Yeah, that's true. I'll ask you, every time we've gone down or had a bad season, there's been players and several of them that I abjectly hate and like, I feel hatred for, you know, it was the Rose last time we went down, the midfielder. Was it Danny Mitch, Rose?
Danny Rose, yeah. What, the one who, the 5G, yeah.
Yeah.
Senior player, talking about snow.
Didn't like him. But, you know, this year, there's quite a few I don't rate, but there's none that I'm like, you know, I don't like you. You know, I think
there were players that didn't put in shifts last year. And that's my worry. Yeah. It's like, you don't know what's... I think it's probably unique. Because Linwood did that interview... And because of the stuff we've been privy to, we know what stuff has happened in the past. And we saw what Montel Gibson did, breaking COVID lockdown and having a gender reveal party. Danny Rose whinging about snow in April, saying the government is controlling it.
Payne headbutting people.
Yeah, Payne headbutting his own player in the middle of the game. You know, what is, you know, that's... Man, what? How are we at that level? What is going wrong that we're not aware of? We've got a decent owner in charge who's given the world. We had a decent manager at the start of the season who has been successful with Town before. Why are we here?
I think sometimes, without going into next week's pod, which we seem to be doing, I think sometimes it's just as simple as it looks, and it's not as complicated. You know, it's not more complicated than it looks. It's, we're just not good enough. It's that simple. There's no 3D chess to it.
The difference in the halves of the thing that I keep going back to, is it a fitness thing? Is it a mental thing? Is it a confidence thing? Are these players so fragile in confidence that they can't, they just go, oh, here we go again. It's like they basically embodied the Town fans. It's like, oh my God, they're going to win.
It's a mixture of all of those. We're just not good enough at all of those things put together. You've got individual players that might be good at some, but aren't complemented by the other players that are good at other things. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't really. It really doesn't.
But for no want of desire or effort or laziness, I don't. Other seasons I've seen that. This year I haven't. You know, I don't question anybody's output. I question
physical exertion.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
But I think there were times before the Doncaster game, think of that team, there were times when I was questioning it. But the players have done themselves a solid with the performances they put in since. But they have been, it's like a really stodgy blancmange in terms of performance. And I don't know. We'll go into it next week. This is all the stuff you can enjoy next season and next week as a little teaser. And again, if you want to get involved and join the podcast team or do a little bit on the side, do let us know. We'll be glad to have you on board. And you can take the piss with Sam in a WhatsApp group with the rest of us. Mike, pleasure as always. AI Sam, pleasure to see you as well.
He's like that Crawley fan, isn't he?
He is that Crawley.
I'm still here.
Why didn't we get him on? What's going on?
We could have made 2 hours then. We'd nearly be as long as Brighton if we'd done that, wouldn't we? Remember the Brighton one?
He's going to be happy as well. 4 hours. He was really happy though, wasn't he?
Let's go and get him on midweek. Do a bonus episode.
Yeah. He might be really happy.
Could expect us on Wednesday night.
It's since we got Madry in the bar.
Says, who's he? Where's he signed from?
I don't know.
The overseas players.
Bruce doesn't get a mention on this podcast. He's not dedicated enough to come on. I don't know what's going on.
He's in a bush. It was his birthday.
Hello to Mrs. Fenwick as well. That's such a good joke.
And on that note, on that bombshell.
I'm just waiting for the WhatsApp to go off now.
He's busy. Right. Thank you all so much for joining us. Have a wonderful week. We will see you all at Crawley. Come along. It'll be pointless, but it'll be half decent to, you know, have a beer and watch us lose to Crawley. So see you all next week. Open wide for some soccer!
And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 1130.
Go!
At 1130.
I don't think I've ever wanted to be on a stand more than my life around here. They're going crazy.
Hey, they got plenty here. They've been fish flying about. There's no tomorrow.
What a magnificent piece of fire!